I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show. The election of 2010, the Tea Party, the celebration, the change of majority from the Democratic control of the 111th in the House of Representatives to the Republican control in the 112th, a profound change. Nope, business as usual. What I learned from Louise Radnofsky, who reports for the Wall Street Journal in Washington, is that departing members of the House of Representatives, as well as members from both parties for a long time, take year-end opportunities to reward their staffs with bonuses or with increases in some fashion in order to spend the amount of money that is allocated for each member of Congress each year by the budget. You either spend it all or you return it. So what we're looking at here is a practice I didn't know about, and you might not either. Let's go into the details. Louise, a very good evening to you. Members of Congress get between, you estimate, $1.4 and $2 million a year to spend. Is it true for their offices in Washington and in their district? Is it true that if they don't spend it, they have to give it back to the Treasury?
Well, it goes back to the Treasury by default, although some lawmakers also make a show of handing money back officially to the Treasury because they recognize that the way in which they spend their office budgets can often be a political point in and of itself.
All right. So we have a spend it or lose it. And at the end of last year, you record in this metric, at the end of 2010, 96 members of Congress paid their employees $6.7 million, which was an incredibly, a very large increase, a 31% increase over more in the fourth quarter of 2010 than they did in the first three quarters. Is that because the election was over and they were going home, or is this a routine practice after an election to increase the payroll?
Well, John, it's actually a routine practice for members of Congress, whether they're staying or going, to give their staff some kind of year-end bonuses. And you see every single year, not just in a midterm year, the payroll spikes dramatically in the fourth quarter. So we tracked that again this year because we were interested in it. But what we found was especially striking was that members of Congress who weren't coming back for the 112th Congress paid out an increase to their staff of around twice as much as members who were returning. And there are a number of possible reasons for this, perhaps there was less pressure on them to be seen to be spending money in a certain way, but also some of the ways in which other members use up their budgets at the end of the year by investing in, for example, computer equipment were right. Obviously not relevant to these folks. And what we found when we spoke to some of them as well is that they actually felt a need to pay some sort of severance to their staffers, as they put it. These people were out of work now for no fault of their own, and the members of Congress wanted to make sure that they were taken care of.
No illegality, nothing that is not lawful here. Is that correct, Louise?
Right.
Right, okay.
There are certain rules governing how bonuses are paid out that actually curb the size of them. And we should stress, we're not talking Wall Street size here as
right.
much as we're talking what is on average around $4,000, but actually ranges more from a few hundred dollars to $10,000. And you'll find people often around that end of the scale.
And we're talking about their staffers, and they have, for example, a staff that ranges between, and according to Louise's piece, between $20,000 and $168,411 a year. So it's a wide range, lots of experience. I certainly know staffers on the Hill. They're dedicated. They overwork. They're driven. They're very competitive. Lyndon Johnson was one once upon a time, so they turn into presidents. But now the question is this sudden splurge at the or burst at the end of the year. One particular member of Congress whom I've known for a long time because I went to school with him, Jim Marshall, who's now teaching at Princeton University, seems to have paid an enormous amount of money for anything, $237,000 to 17 staff members. After he was defeated in November. Is this atypical, Louise?
Well, what we saw was that lawmakers, as I said, who were on their way out the door, paid increases of around twice as much as lawmakers who were staying. And in the case of lawmakers such as Mr. Marshall, but also several others from both parties, they effectively doubled their employees' paychecks for the final 3 months.
Now, this money could have gone back to Treasury, right?
Yes.
They don't have to give it out. So
no.
It's their discretion. Does anybody call them to account here, given the debate that's now in front of us? I don't want to use the word irony, but there it is.
It's a tricky issue because, as we've noticed, members of both parties do it. Now, this past year was a record pay year for Democratic staffers, it's important to note, though at the same time that the end of 2006 heading into 2007 was a record pay period for Republican staffers, precisely because a lot of their employers were leaving office at the time. So because this is a practice that's fairly widely carried out by members of both parties, it's not exactly something that either leadership office has shown much inclination to weigh into.
Right. It reminds me of that check-writing scandal that happened back in the 1990s when members of Congress overdrew their checking accounts or something like that. The details are lost in the fog of war. But everybody was doing it, so nobody really thought there was anything wrong with it until there was a newspaper article. So here we are, Louise. You've written a newspaper article. Are you hearing that it's now suddenly not acceptable anymore? Are there members of Congress who are now swearing that they will never do this again?
Well, there was a slight culture shift at the beginning of this new Congress, not dissimilar to the culture shift that we saw in the 1990s in the wake of events such as the post office scandal. One of the first things that the Republican-controlled House did was pass a resolution that would cut members' office budgets by 5% for the next 2 years. It's not necessarily clear, however, that that would have an impact on salaries. It might, but members of Congress have a fair amount of discretion as to how they use their office allowances, and they can divide them between payroll and equipment and office rent. And it may be that some of them cut corners elsewhere and are able to maintain high staff salaries, and if they get to the end of the year having budgeted very cautiously and find they have extra money, who knows what we'll see at the end of this year and the end of next year.
Right. The question is $1.4 to $2 million for each member of Congress too much? Is anyone asking that question, that we've given them too much and it overwhelms them? They just feel like they have to spend it, so let's cut it back. You said 5%. How about 50%?
15% was on the table during the debate over the continuing resolution. The reason that the 1.4 million to 2 million range exists is that members of Congress are recognized to have different needs depending on aspects of their district,
right.
Its distance from Washington,
right.
And other things. And I think most members of Congress would tell you that the work that they do requires a certain number of staff. Many of them would obviously prefer to have more staff and more resources to contact constituents. It also seems as if constituents do have very high demands from their members of Congress. They expect timely responses to their letters. At the same time, those constituents, those voters, certainly probably do balk at the idea of $1.4 to $2 million to run an office.
Right, and Louise links on an article she has up in Wall Street Journal, links to a page, Legistorm, that has a chart, so you can see who spent what and how much of an increase it was in the fourth quarter. The winner, of course, is Representative Ginny Brown Waite, Republican from Florida, who retired. She was plus 120% in the fourth quarter. And no one, I just want to make sure, no one's offering to give this money back now. No one's going to get it. It's done. It's closed. We've written a story about it. That was then. This is now. Is that correct, Louise?
That's pretty much the case. And the focus, I think rightly, has been more on the elected officials who were handing out the extra payments, the bonuses, rather than the aides who were receiving them.
And the question of Jim Marshall, there's an indication here that some of the people he gave bonuses to worked on his campaign and were coming back. So is there anything that's slightly unethical about that, that you, after having lost a campaign, you give a perk to the people who worked for you?
Well, again, it's a fairly common practice for members of Congress to have staffers who work on both their campaign and in their congressional offices, which is perfectly okay as long as, and this is certainly the case for Mr. Marshall, they're paid from different accounts. And it's also important to note that while some members of his staff worked on his campaign, other members of his staff didn't work on his campaign, and there doesn't appear to be any distinction in the size of the bonuses that were awarded based on whether they had or hadn't taken part in the campaign as well.
Louise Radnofsky, reporting for the Wall Street Journal in Washington. Year-end bonuses for members of Congress. I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show.